Take off your jacket, because it's time to get deep under the covers with a loose read.
Good morning, Suri. How's it going?
Morena, morena, Johnny. Pretty well. How are you?
Yeah, good. Now, you've brought in a book of poetry.
Yeah, beautiful little book of poetry cover. Is very like mossy and dark. And it's the third poetry collection by Gregory Kahn. I was first introduced to his work actually at a Poetry Day event at Time Out, and was really just blown away by his poetry. He's kind of this amazing, he is truly, like, to me, I think, like a technician of language. There's like always like two or three things going on per line that you don't pick up on until you like read it multiple times. He's also a coder in his spare time, and I'd really encourage anyone to go onto his website. It's kind of like a poetry or like a verse generator called glass.leaves, and it kind of uses, it's like you enter a body of text and you can choose how you want to manipulate the text. And to me, it's like way more interesting than no shade, the like ChatGPT and stuff. It's like you, like some of the stuff that you come up with when you enter your own text is so interesting. You have like options of like removing adverbs and doing like a Markov change and like switching around like lines from like a second body of text. It's like you could literally spend hours doing it. Maybe don't do it if you're a student and you're time poor, but I like literally spent like half my Sunday evening just like trying to see what buzzy combinations I could come up with. So
is Gregory Kahn a local poet?
Yeah, he's from Pōneke, and I think born in Singapore, and like all of his poetry, including this one, is sort of such an interesting way of writing like the tension between like being Singaporean and living in Aotearoa. And I think in Clay Eaters, the book I'm reviewing today in particular, he sort of shifts away from like just the differences and sort of looks at like the similarities or like the overlaps in like both cultures in super, super interesting ways. So it's like the book is, it's like sectioned into different parts, but it's not like ordered chronologically. It's sort of like these fragments. So you have Gregory as like a young boy growing up in Singapore. You have him doing his military training at an island where his uncle also was head of military training. And it's like this really, it's like Teko Island. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And it's like a military training base. And it's this lush, full of vegetation island that's sort of like sparsely inhabited. And as you sort of move through the book, you also experience Singapore undergoing modernity, and all of this kind of like vegetation starts to like home, you know, like these big houses and this modern way of life, but still very much haunted by the ghosts of the past. And there's this like constant, there's like literal hauntings in the book, but also the feeling that even as you shift into the future, it's impossible to outrun the past. One of the most interesting poems in here to me was, he found, obviously in his research somewhere, the account of a Māori soldier in 1962 who'd been stationed at this particular island, and talks about how like the indigenous locals in Singapore shared so many similarities with Māori, to the point where like the locals thought that the Māori battalions were actually locals themselves. And in one of the poems, which I'll like read now, he also sort of talks about like the similarity in language between the two, which I don't know about you, but I would have never expected like the Southeast Asian country to share these kind of bits of language with somewhere so far in the Pacific. So I'll read that little piece now. I found an article on Papers Past, an account by a Māori soldier living in Malaya, Malaysian Singapore, published in 1962. New Zealand troops had been mobilized to fight communist insurgents in Malaya. For the first time, we were the same color as everyone around us, and it was the Pākehā chaps who were in the minority. We found that we could often pass ourselves off as Malays with very much cheaper shopping as a result. For a start, it was embarrassing for people to come up and start talking Malay to us, but after a while, many of us picked it up and found it very similar to our own language. The grammar was similar, with no verb to be. Descriptive words come after the noun instead of before. Pronunciation is almost identical, and we were thrilled to find out that many of our words were similar to theirs. For example, pai is bai in Malay, ika, fish, is ikan, rima is lima, tangi is tangis, and so on. And there's like, outside of those words, I won't read out every single word on this list, but there is like a page where like everything from like pronouns and body parts like share so many similarities, and at some points are like totally identical in Malay and Māori, which I find super interesting. Like the words for raw eye and point are exactly the same in both languages. So yeah, it's like, I don't know, I think it's like, I've never really seen someone exploring like identity necessarily in that way, the similarities between two disparate worlds rather than just the differences. And I also think, yeah, like in it, he sort of talks about like, you know, moving to Auckland with his family for the first time, with his brother moving to Ann Arbor in Michigan, which must have been quite a buzzy experience for him and his family, and watching his brother graduate, his father going through a stroke. So it's like all these incredibly personal parts of Gregory on the page, but also interspersed with like, you know, next to these super personal poems sort of going through what Gregory's going through in his life. Like articles from like soldiers. Of course, there's the Māori soldier, but also like his uncle obviously ran like a blog in 2010 and wrote about his experiences of training military men in the 1980s in this like small Singaporean island. And yeah, it's such an interesting sort of juxtaposition. And at first, I think when I was reading it, it just felt so maybe like a little bit jumbled to me. Like I didn't really fully understand what the relationship between the two were. And then you keep going through the book and then you're like, oh, right. It's like pointing us to like this connective tissue between like not just like our blood relations, but also the connective tissue between like the past, the present, and the future. It's like so cleverly done. Like I feel like ever since reading it, it's still sort of brewing in my mind. And I think if you have an opportunity to watch Gregory perform, if you can't buy Clay Eaters, I think you should definitely do that. He is such an interesting technician in a way that like I haven't seen in poetry before personally. Yeah.
Sounds intriguing. Sounds great. Okay, what was the name? What's the name of the little book again?
It's called Clay Eaters by Gregory Kahn, published by AUP. So you should be able to get it, if not at Time Out, of course, at the University Bookstore in Cade Edgar.
Okay. Is it obviously pretty new, or is it a classic?
Just came out, like I would say just came out last week. Okay. So it's been like a real rush to read it, but a good rush.
Hot off the press.
Yeah. And so, I think keep your eye out. I reckon it's definitely a contender for the Occams next year for sure. And you heard it from me first.
All right. Thank you, Suri, from Time Out Books there.
Thank you.
Awesome. Cheers, bye.
Bye.
That was Loose Reads.